Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Isn't this fun, Andy?
Always. Come on.
I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. Thanks for joining us.
And I'm Andy Euler. It's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, the day in the week where we get to answer the questions that y'all send us.
And you can send us more questions, as always, to makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voicemail at our number 508-827-6278, also known as 508-UBSMART.
So leading us off today is a question about that infrastructure bill that just made its way through the Senate. I guess it's going to head over to the House.
Hello, this is Stephen from Cincinnati. It's infrastructure week.
Woo-hoo.
And there's $1 trillion in the plan, but they keep saying it's only $500 billion in new spending. Where are the other $500 billion coming from? Like old money or I don't know. Make me smart. Thank you.
This feels like wheelhouse, Kimberly, for you. Come on.
Yeah, but you were covering this today, right?
I was. But you,
so
you
why
can
don't
help
you take
us.
It? Go ahead.
Okay, fine. So basically what happened was the Senate passed that bipartisan infrastructure bill. It was interesting because there was a lot of support from the Republican Party. We had been talking about, you know, sort of the running joke I'm sure you and I have made 100 times or did during the Trump administration was every other week felt like infrastructure week. It felt like we were talking about sort of the next thing that we were going to do. We were going to talk about a different infrastructure bill. Just never happened over those last 4 years. This is a big deal, and it's a big sort of bipartisan thing that the Biden administration made a priority. Now, it includes $500 billion in new spending. Like Stephen had said, it was specifically for roads, bridges, pipes, ports, and things like that. Now, it also includes another $500 billion from existing transportation programs that normally they get renewed every year. So that's basically that, you know, when folks talk about $1 trillion, I think that's where they're sort of getting that number, is that that was already going to be spent. That was another. So there's another new $500 billion that is part of this deal to be used for a whole bunch of different things. Kimberly was saying that I looked at this today, actually, plug for Marketplace. We have a story today about energy infrastructure. So basically $73 billion has been allocated to update, for instance, the electrical grid and power infrastructure. So I looked at sort of what this bill will mean and could mean for existing infrastructure, for updates to sort of the way that we think about energy, especially in the context of the energy transformation that we've all sort of been talking about for a long time. There's other stuff in this bill, though, Kimberly.
Yeah, I mean, to dig back into the sort of old versus sure. new money, they're also pulling unspent COVID-19
right.
relief funds, also putting some additional taxes on people trying to realize their gains from cryptocurrency sales, and a couple of other sort of nips and tweaks and pulling money from programs that maybe didn't spend it all. And I think there's even some like undistributed unemployment funds. And so all of that kind of can be clawed back, reallocated, or maneuvered in order to get that pot of old money. But then, yes, there is a pot of new money for new programs that didn't have any existing funding before. But, you know, senators want a big dollar number to take back to their districts, especially
sure.
on that sort of roads and bridges part. You know, you can stand in front of a decrepit old bridge and say, you know, I went to Washington and got this money to get this fixed, and let's, you know, put the shovel in the ground and cut the ribbon and all this stuff. And it's very sure. popular thing to do, which is why we hear about Infrastructure Week all the time. Now then, right. we're one of the things you'll also hear about, in addition to this new and old spending, is whether or not it's air quote paid for.
Paid for itself.
Now,
right. yeah.
people in Congress like to say that things are paid for, which can be fact-checked, and the CBO is saying, no, this is going to contribute to the deficit. But let's just keep in mind, we also heard from a lot of Republicans that those tax cuts were going to pay for themselves, and they did not. Right. And so this expectation that new spending has to pay for itself is something that is usually called upon by one party when they're not in power. So Democrats complained about the Republican tax cuts not paying for themselves. People who are not in support of this legislation are complaining about not paying for yourself itself. You've got some really fiscal conservatives and some of the think tanks around D.C. that have been saying don't contribute to the deficit at all, that dislike it all and want everything paid for. But it's the argument in Washington that never quite seems to end. But I will point out that our girl, Heather Long, who sometimes shows up at the weekly wrap on Marketplace, but who's also just a lovely human being, has a really good breakdown in the Washington Post of where all of this money is allocated to go right now. Of course, it could change once it gets to the House. But that is the bill. And our next question comes from Matt in Ohio. He wants to know, how do Olympic athletes get paid? Is it like the Avengers where they just get paid in exposure, or are they primarily paid through deals with advertisers? Andy, you're our sports person. Go.
Yeah. I was going to say, this does feel a little bit wheelhouse for me, too. Olympic athletes are not well paid. They're not well compensated for what they do. A lot of folks, you hear a lot of sort of testimonials about, I'm putting off earning money. I'm putting off sort of making a living to aspire toward the Olympic dream, right? To sort of win a gold medal and sort of commit to that. Because the way that it works, the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, which say what you will about the IOC. I mean, it feels like there's a lot of money in the IOC that just doesn't get redistributed and doesn't go anywhere. So the IOC doesn't actually pay anybody for competing at the Olympic Games or even for winning medals. Now, individual countries, I read about China specifically sort of lavishly giving things, cars, houses, things like that to its Olympic athletes, especially if they win. In the United States, it's basically sort of a monetary gain if you win a medal. So $37,500 for every gold medal won, $22,500 for silver, $15,000 for bronze. And then you also have those athletes, what our questionnaire was sort of asking about, sort of the advertisement dollars, the sponsorship deals. You have, of course, your Simone Bileses, you have, Michael Phelps and people like that who made tons of money and continue to still make money on those advertising dollars and those sponsorship deals. But those are absolutely the minority here. Most of the people who, if you're a fencing expert, if you are an expert in equestrian stuff, you're going to have to pay for the horse. You're going to have to pay for the stable. Your bills are going to add up, and sort of the compensation that you get for even winning is pretty low. There was a survey of elite athletes.
I'm about to say, unless you live in Singapore, in which case, if you win a gold medal, you get like almost $737,000 if you win a gold medal and you're from Singapore.
Exactly. So the way that the way that different countries treat winning a medal at the Olympics and the compensation that goes along with it, you're right. It varies very, very much. But a lot of athletes are, they're not making a whole lot of money and they're sacrificing a lot to sort of do what they love to do, but also to entertain folks who are watching the Olympics, right?
Yeah, Marissa found this, our wonderful producer Marissa found this study. The advocacy group Global Athlete did a survey that was featured in an AP article where they surveyed 491 athletes across the country. And many of them struggled to said they were not financially stable. One person said, you know, I don't have a pension plan, no chance of structural income over a longer period of time. My parents still have to help me pay for my food. People have bake sales, like you said, GoFundMe pages. So it's not necessarily the most lucrative thing for many Olympians. They're in it for the sport while other people get really, really rich off of it.
right. Those different executives at the IOC. You're right. It's, you know, you hear those sort of harrowing tales of people, you know, Olympians on, you know, applying for food stamps and things like that. I mean, it's real because the way that we sort of individually, the United States has set it up, it's just not well compensated. I was actually thinking about it in the context of college athletes. I've been doing a ton of reporting on sort of the changes that's happening to college athletics and the NCAA and compensation for student athletes. I couldn't help but sort of draw the comparison here with Olympic athletes, where you're an absolute elite athlete and you're the best at something. And somehow so many other people are making so much more money off of your expertise than you are. I think things are changing in college sports for the better. And I think students are going to be compensated. They're certainly going to be compensated for their names and images and likenesses. But I think we are close to athletes in colleges getting paid. I honestly think that. And it feels like it needs to get there for the Olympians.
Okay.
Our next question. Sorry, that felt somber, but you know.
Yeah, we can't be like downers all the time. People are starting to complain about me on Discord. Right.
our next question comes from Danielle in Baltimore.
I have a question about the cost of COVID testing. With all the mandates that are starting to come out from companies and parts of the federal government requiring people to be either vaccinated or submit to weekly COVID tests, who's bearing the cost of all those tests?
Depends on your employer and where, what you do and what the rules are. So the New York Times
sort of
dug
where you
into
are, right?
this. The New York Times dug into this and found that routine COVID tests can cost anywhere from $50 to $100. Now, when the federal government was trying to get everybody tested all the time to sort of see where the pandemic was going, they said that insurance companies had to cover the costs of tests ordered by your doctor, but routine employer tests don't have to be covered by insurance. And yes, there were free testing sites and things like that, but at least here in DC and in many other places, they ask you if you have insurance. And if you have insurance, they ask you to provide it. So getting back to the employers, some employers are picking up the tab and saying, because we want people to be tested, we want to encourage testing, it's going to be free, we're going to cover it. For example, the US government, which is asking or telling people who are not vaccinated, they're rolling out more and more vaccine requirements. Unvaccinated workers, they need to get regular testing and show proof of a recent test. And the U.S. government, a.k.a. us taxpayers, picking up the tab for those tests. On the other hand, there's the example of Rhodes College, for example, which is charging unvaccinated students that don't have a religious exemption or something like that, $1,500 per semester for coronavirus testing to in the write-up about this, that they don't want their students who are vaccinated to have to bear the cost for these unvaccinated students. And then MGM Resorts is charging like their workers $15 as like a copay or something like that.
Right. I remember right in the middle of sort of the, probably last summer, I read about and I did a little bit of reporting on at airports and sort of airlines figuring out that they could give rapid tests. But if you were if you wanted to go to Hawaii, for instance, you had to have a negative test that allowed you to get on the plane. And so then airlines and airports were providing those tests, but it was going to cost you $100. And so it was one of those things where it was, do you want to do this thing? Well, we are offering this service, but it's not free and you're going to have to pay for it. You're right. It sort of feels like the employer the onus has been put on the employee, I suppose, if you're unvaccinated. Does it feel like that? I mean, I know you and I were talking about this yesterday, but sort of a little bit more pressure from the employer to get vaccinated. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I think that there's probably – we're going to start seeing increased demands, pressure, situations where people who choose for non-health-related mm-hmm. or religious-related reasons to remain unvaccinated, there's probably going to be more pressure that they should have to bear that cost. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw insurance companies saying they're no longer going to, you know, mm-hmm. keep footing the bill for these things when people are choosing not to get vaccines. But that's still rolling out. Germany said yep. that it will stop paying for COVID tests for people who are making the choice not to get vaccinated. All right. The last question I will answer is from Ramon in Los Angeles, who wrote wanting to know where Molly was. She and Kai are both on vacation until next week. I will be back tomorrow with Megan McCarty Carino. And a big thank you to Andy for joining the past sure. couple of days.
That's been awesome.
Oh, it's been fun. Well,
it's been great.
Even if we went to the dark place a couple times. But okay. yeah, that's it for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday.
Keep sending your questions, please. We're at makemesmart@marketplace.org. You can also leave us a voicemail. That number is 508-827-6278, also known as 508, you be smart.
I wonder what the 408 area code is.
I know. I was just thinking about that when I said it. I was like, somebody's going to get hammered with some 408.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera, who digs in and pulls all those numbers for us. And
absolutely.
Today's program was engineered by Brian Allison.
Ben Talladay Tolley and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
Yes.
408.
Okay,
you're
now
right.
I'm just going to go look it up right now. 408 area code.
Very good, 408. Blame Andy.
Yes, blame Andy. That is, it's also in California.
Okay.
I'm still looking. Somewhere in California.
Kind of like San Francisco.
I'm sure we'll find out later.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.